This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this very exciting episode. We have on Gary V's trainer, Jordan Syatt, or Gary V's former trainer, I guess semi-regular trainer now, kind of infrequent.
Yeah, he still stays in touch, still supports them.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of those episodes I have still been thinking about some of the conversations we've had during it. Obviously, getting an insider's view, opinion, experience, stories of what it's like to be around Gary V, what Gary V's legendary status is actually like, was pretty cool. It's pretty cool to get to ask some of those questions and really have a trainer side by side with him who, you know, as I mentioned at the start of this podcast, is really just a well-researched, well-studied, evidence-based guy, like someone that actually knows what he's doing. And it's so rare for some reason that these really high-profile people get access to someone that's actually that good.
Yeah, they usually end up with shit trainers. They always just get just like the best-looking trainer.
Yeah, but just have garbage workouts, yeah. Like rubbish nutrition advice, and yeah, they end up, I don't know, doing bee venom therapy and fucking cold plunges and stuff, weird shit like that. But anyway, it was nice to get Jordan on. Firstly, you just know 100% you're getting the truth. Awesome to get some stories about him and Gary V on the road trying to get fit and just really hearing how he navigated what is easily one of the most difficult schedules, bodies and personality types to get into shape, and some of the results he got were pretty phenomenal. Really how he got out of shape as well, his personal story of what it was like to really sacrifice his health as a trainer. And you know, I was talking about this the other day. Imagine getting fat, like really hard. And to get yourself back and to kind of get back on track is, you know, massive credit to Jordan. It's definitely not an easy thing to do. So this is an awesome episode. I really, really loved this episode. And you guys will definitely love it. So if you do like it as much as we did, please screenshot it, tag Jordan and tag us, because, yeah, this was an incredible episode. Of course, we have some amazing products that always support what we do.
This first product has got to be a good product for Gary Vee.
Oh, 100%. So if you're tapped out on caffeine, if you've got way, way too many coffees under your belt before midday, and you're looking for an alternative, you know you want to cut back on caffeine, you still want to keep it in there because everyone loves, you know, coffee in the morning and the culture that goes along with it and sitting down, enjoying it. Like, that's an amazing part of everyone's day. You don't want to get rid of that, but you want to increase your natural energy. You want energy that's going to come from food, from nutrients, not just from caffeine, not just from coffee, not just from pre-workout drinks. You need to get activated nutrients power up. Has maca root in there, has guarana, has all kinds of different herbs in actual amounts that have been well researched and studied. That product is called the Power Up product. So the Power Up product you can get at activatednutrients.com. Right now they're doing a special, so you can get 40% off that product. All you have to do is use the code MMP, just those three letters when you check out, for the Power Up product. It mixes, it's delicious. So you can actually just have it by itself with water. It's kind of like a chocolatey drink because it's got cacao powder in there as well. But you can, you know, add it into a smoothie as well, add it in with your shake. It just goes with everything. It's just a nice, mild chocolatey flavor. But yeah, Power Up product, if you use the code MMP, you get 40% off. It's a great way to kind of increase your natural energy from foods rather than just going for more and more caffeine. And I mean, Raph, you've used it multiple times, I've used it multiple times. You can feel the energy from it.
And man, it's a non-caffeinated energy. Every morning. So good. Such a good way to start.
Amazing product. So Power Up again at activatednutrients.com using the code MMP, just those three letters, for 40% off this product. And then as well, another amazing product that just keeps on getting better as well is True Coach. We use it with all our clients at the gym now. Ever since we made the switch over to Creature 2.0, where every client now has their own individualized program, we've really got an opportunity to kind of flesh out and build out our True Coach library. And I tell you what, the more you use this program, the better it gets. So let me give you an example. When you have one client, you write one program. You might write a second program, maybe a third program. Now you add in 5 clients. Now you add in 10, 15, 20 clients. The amount of programs that you have, it gets used amongst more people. So you write 10, 12 programs for one person, but as you bring new people in, it doesn't mean you have to write new programs. You can just give them programs that you've already written before that are appropriate for them and make small tweaks that are really fast. I would say, and I've seen coaches program on Excel sheets and I've seen coaches program on True Coach, I would say it's at least saves you half the time. It's at least 2 times faster.
At least.
Minimum. And that's like, that's before you even get the hang of it.
Yeah.
When you get the hang of it, it could be like 5-6 times faster to create programs. So if you're writing programs for clients online, or you're, you know, getting a program delivered to you, you want to be using TrueCoach. You guys can check it out, truecoach.co/MMP. That's truecoach.co, so C-O, /MMP, and you will get a free two-week trial. And then after that, if you do choose to sign up, continue working with them, get a percentage off your next few months. So definitely go check that out, truecoach.co/MMP. Okay, guys, here we are with Jordan Syatt. All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. This week, we have on someone who is, in many ways, I would say he is kind of like the American James Smith. I would say the content is very similar for the listeners that are obviously familiar with our interviews with James. But we have Jordan Syatt. Jordan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm a huge fan of James as well. So
yes,
if you compare me to him, that makes me super happy.
Okay, that's good. That's good. We're off to a good start. So Jordan, the place I wanted to start for the people listening that don't know that, well, obviously we would have told them in the intro, but you were Gary Vee's trainer for 3 years. That's how you obviously really cut your teeth early on. But you've done a lot of other stuff since, and I want to get into that as well. But I do want to start with, you know, obviously being Gary Vee's trainer, you mentioned in the video where you talked about when you had to quit. So when you chose after 3 years not to continue, you talked about one of the things, and I could definitely relate to this, and I want to get more specific on this, but you talked about how you thought you worked hard. You know, you had your own business. Obviously, you were super strong. You trained super hard. You trained at Westside. So you knew what hard work was, and you felt like you were working hard, but then you felt like it didn't even hold up even at all to what Gary did. So can you describe what were the fundamental differences between where you were and what you thought was hard work and what kind of Gary showed you?
Yeah. So I think we got to clarify definitely hard work in terms of business, right? So, I mean, deadlifted 4 times my body weight, trained at Westside. Like I've worked unbelievably hard in fitness and athletics and weight training. But in business, keep in mind at that point in time, I had my own business. I was traveling the world and I had an online business that was, thank God, it was doing well. And I thought that I was working really hard on it. I thought that I was, you know, it was like the grinding and hustling. And I was like, yeah, like I can work from the beach. Like I thought it was super cool. And then I went and I got the job with Gary, which was a blessing. And I see his schedule. That's the first thing that happens is I get into his Google schedule and I see it on my phone and speechless. Like his schedule, I'm literally, it's hard to articulate the feelings that come up with looking at his schedule. You can't even imagine. I actually remember, so the first time I ever interacted with Gary after, so I got the interview. I flew from Tel Aviv to New York, coached him, went back to Tel Aviv, didn't hear from him for 6 weeks, right? So that was the only interaction I had with him. 6 weeks later go by, I get a text message from a number that I don't know. And it just says, are you ready? And my response was, who the fuck is that? I had no idea who was texting me. It was 6 weeks after the interview. I didn't know what it was. And the response that I get to that is a picture of Gary flexing. And I was like, oh my God, I just said, who the fuck is this to Gary Vaynerchuk? And that was like their way of telling me I got the job.
Mm.
So then I replied and I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. This is going to be amazing. Da, 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 da. Like, and he doesn't reply. And in my mind, I'm like, I just screwed up my chances. Like, he doesn't even reply to my text. And then I was like, by the way, I'm really sorry for being rude earlier. No reply. And I'm like, oh my God, like he hates me. I lost the job, all this stuff. Then I finally get to New York and I start working with him. I'm in his calendar and I'm like, oh, no wonder he didn't reply. Like, this guy is going all day, every day. Like, he's got over 1,000 unread text messages on his phone at all times. His DMs are going crazy. His schedule's booked from 6 a.m. until oftentimes 2 a.m. every single day.
Minute,
he's got
every minute.
Everything booked from showers to his Uber rides or driving, like everything. He has 5-minute appointments booked out 6 months in advance. It's like, this guy works harder than anybody you can ever imagine. Like, if someone told me, like, they're like, hey, we've done a study, and it turns out that Gary Vee works harder than all of the world leaders combined, I would believe it because this guy is nonstop. And so I vividly remember there was one time about, it must have been 3 to 6 months after we started working together, that we got off a plane at like 2 a.m. It was him and D-Rock and I. And he was like, how much harder do you work now versus when, you know, you first started? And it was immeasurable. And it was because when I first started working with him, I didn't realize how much free time I actually had. I didn't realize it. I didn't know. And one of the things I got better at with working with him, I got better at working in transit. I got better at working when I was doing things that otherwise I might have just used as an excuse just to, you know, live. And then this brings up the whole conversation of, well, do you need to be working all the time? Maybe you should enjoy life a little bit more. Like when Gary and I would travel, we'd go to Hong Kong or Germany or Ireland or Norway, wherever. Like we were there for like 6 or 12 hours. We'd go there, maybe get a hotel. Sometimes we wouldn't even get a hotel. He'd do his speech and then we'd leave. Like there was no sightseeing. There was no, like, this wasn't like traveling to travel the world. This was traveling for business and like the most minimal time wasted for business. Mm. So I learned how to be very efficient and very effective with my work, but it also, for whatever it's worth, isn't a life that I want to live, right? Like that's just now when I travel, like I'd like to relax for a few days and I'd like to, you know, see the sights and get to know the people a little bit and the culture. Mm. That's just not where Gary was at that time. So I learned a lot, but holy hell, I worked way harder when I started with Gary.
Mm. That's awesome. Yeah. Those are some pretty cool insights. So one of the obvious things that comes up for me is like, yeah, what you just touched on is that obviously the brain, we know from the research, needs the downtime to process the uptime, to be ready to put the output up at a high level. It seems like there isn't a lot of downtime there for him. And then obviously, as you were being dragged along through that, didn't seem like there was a lot of downtime there for you. And you talked about obviously, you know, weight gain and your training suffering, et cetera, et cetera. So how did you, what were some strategies that you, because obviously that you're not going to get the downtime. That just seems like the fact. So what strategies did you employ to make sure that, okay, how can I keep my output high? How can I stay sharp? How can I not just walk around all day just wanting a nap?
So the reality is I just solely focused on one thing. All other aspects of my life were eliminated. Like, a good friend once told me, he was like, out of sleep, business, fitness, family and friends, you can only ever choose three and actually do it well. And at that point in my life, I chose one, which was just business. That's all I focused on. My relationships went to shit. My health went to shit. My sleep went to shit. Everything went to shit. Is it okay for me to swear about
it? Yeah.
Like, it's where it went. That's it went to shit.
Everything went down the gutter. And I don't regret it because it allowed me to really hyper-focus and excel in that one thing for a very brief period of time to where I think it will help carry me for a long time to come. But I did sacrifice a lot. So, I mean, if I got 4 hours of sleep a night, that was a good night. And that's not a joke. Like that's just the truth. And that's also why I wasn't able to strength train, and my nutrition was terrible, and why like I gained a lot of body fat and lost a lot of muscle, and why like I couldn't have a relationship, and why like it was terrible. But that was the one thing I focused on. So I think the only way I was actually able to do that was because I sacrificed so much of everything else going on in my life. And the reason I want to be honest about it and tell the truth rather than sort of glamorize it and make it sound cool is because I want people to understand it's not a bad thing to go for that, but you have to have realistic expectations of what you're going to do. And in the same way, if someone's going to try and lose fat, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, you're never going to be hungry and you can eat as much as you want of whatever. Like, no, like you're going to have some restriction in there. Hunger is probably going to be an issue. Maybe you'll get a little bit tired. So they know what to expect.
Yeah.
So like, if you want to go that hard, then that's what you can expect.
Mm.
And how did you deal with, because one thing we've found before is when you work really hard and you start to put the training and nutrition all to the side, you feel like you're just no longer setting a good example because you're still meant to be a trainer. I'm assuming your job was still to be an example and a trainer. And if you are like almost bullshitting around taking care of yourself or you're just looking worse every week, did you still feel like, you know, you were able to set an example or be an inspiration as a trainer?
You know, it's interesting. I think I was lucky in that I never built my business based on how I looked or how I performed. And I think that was one of the best moves I ever made. I think it's a very dangerous road to go down when you're a coach and the success of your business is dependent on your physique or your performance.
Yes.
That being said, I mean, listen, I'm a small guy. Even when I deadlifted 530 pounds, weighing 132, even when I did that, I would still get people being like, does this kid even lift? Like, you know, I'm a small dude. I was sort of used to it. But when I was coaching Gary, by like 2 years in, like I put on more body fat, lost even more muscle. And like those comments stung, like they hit more because I could look in the video and be like, dude, I look fat. Like I looked fat and it clearly wasn't the best example. But it did help my business. For a number of reasons. Interestingly, like I wasn't massively overweight. I wasn't like, I never got to that point. I think a coach does to a certain extent need to look the part in order to really inspire their clients, in order for them to like sort of have someone to look up to, in order to walk the walk and talk the talk. I don't think that it's a good idea to be massively overweight or weak or have never practiced what you preach. But I do think that you also shouldn't build the foundation of your business on your physique or your performance, because it's probably going to be very difficult for you long run. We always talk about sort of finding this balance, right? Like, we got to find the balance. I really don't think balance exists. I very much believe that in order to understand what balance is, you have to sort of toe with the extremes, right? So then you can pull yourself back and say, all right, that was where the extreme was. Now I can find balance off of that. So I think, by me getting to that point, adding more body fat, losing muscle, I've then been able to come back. Like, now my training's crazy. Like, lost a bunch of weight, gaining more strength. I'm competing in jiu-jitsu, like looking good, feeling good. And I can show people that process too, which has been also very, very helpful. So there are pros and cons to it, but I mean, definitely during that time frame, there are a lot more comments of like, this guy is like chubby and like, he doesn't even look like he lifts. But the benefit was, I didn't build my business on not being chubby. I built my business on being relatable and honest.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting about this this subject matter of Gary Vee is that, in almost in an anomaly sort of way, is that someone that has this crazy schedule and is this kind of crazy person actually got a good trainer for once. Like, most people in that level, that caliber, they get the shittest trainers ever, right? They just do the worst workouts. Yeah, it's honestly like it's crazy. And so like, that what's beautiful about this is like, when we speak to you, we know that you've given him the best stuff. You've given him stuff based on research that you know about calorie deficit. So when you were giving Gary his protocols, and I know that, you know, the big focus in the beginning was focusing on getting his hip better, taking out some pain issues and or something, which I think, you know, is can actually be better, can be the best thing you'll ever do for a client, more than weight loss or more than muscle building, changing their physique, is getting them out of chronic pain, something they have to live with every day that sucks. But was there anything about something that you did with Gary in terms of his results that surprised you? I mean, this is a guy that's obviously on all the time. You're thinking to yourself, okay, when is he parasympathetic? When is he going to get enough sleep? This sort of stuff. Were you kind of expecting, okay, we might not get any results here, or we're going to get lots of results if we train every day? Like, what about that process in terms of the results surprised you?
So I was expecting to get the most insane transformation you can ever imagine. Because, so first and foremost, when I came in, the first thing Gary said was, if all you do is fix this hip, it'll be worth it. Like, if in 3 years I don't have hip pain, it'll be worth it. And within a few months, he didn't have hip pain. And that was great. Then like, his neck was so stiff, like he could only sit on one side of the airplane because his neck would literally only move in one direction. Like, it was bad. So fixed him up pain wise. And even now to this day, he says all the time, he's like, if I regained all of the weight, like, he's like, I would rather be 30 pounds of body fat heavier and pain free than what I was before.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Like, losing the pain, eliminating the pain was by far the best thing.
Yeah.
Training 7 days a week, I had a very naive view of what was going to happen in mind. I thought that we were going to have 60 minutes a day of great training 7 days a week. And I was like, even if we only have 4 days a week of that, still great. You can crush 60 minutes 4 days a week and get amazing results. But I didn't take into account that I wasn't going to have 60 minutes every day or most days. I was usually going to have between like 20 to 30 minutes. Because, I mean, listen, the workout scheduled for 6. He got in his apartment at 2. He had maybe 3.5 hours of sleep. He's exhausted. He gets up. He's like, I'll be down soon. He falls back asleep. I'm like, dude, and then I'm fucking calling him. Get up, get up, get up. He comes down 20 minutes late. Then we've got to get going. Then he gets calls from his VPs. This is a fire you got to put out. This is a fire you got to put out. It's like, I do my best to get as much high quality, intense work as I can, but traveling all over the world. Cool. Next day we're in LA. Next day we're in Tennessee. Next day we're going to London. One of the funniest stories, I'll never forget this. Going to London was always the hardest struggle because the flight that went off from New York, it would leave at like 7 p.m. So it's too early for him to go to sleep. But then by the time it lands, it's like 6 or 7 a.m. London time, which is our workout time. So he wouldn't sleep on that flight. And the only way that he could actually get to sleep sometimes on that flight would be to drink wine. But I'll never forget this one time, because I would always be half a day ahead of him. I would work, if we worked out in New York and the next day we'd be in London, then immediately after the workout, I would fly to London so that I would be ready to work out when he was there.
Right.
So always a little ahead of him on the schedule. And I'll never forget, I'm waiting at the hotel when he lands and he goes, dude, we can't work out. And I was like, bro, like I came to London for the workout. He was like, I drank too much wine. Like I'm drunk. Like, he drank so much wine to try to go to sleep on the flight to prepare for the workout that he actually got drunk and like he couldn't work out.
Oh my God.
So I mean, and then even during, like that was just a one-time thing, but then we go to London. He's working in London all day. He has meetings from like 10 a.m. until midnight. Then we're supposed to work out the next day, but then like we got to get in before he has to go to the airport super early in the morning, and again he's super tired. It's like it looks like on paper you should have 7 days a week of 60 minutes with Gary. It's more like 7 days a week of 25 to 40 minutes, and a lot of that he's just exhausted, which is why I think the sleep component is not spoken about enough.
Yeah,
if your sleep is shit, you're not going to be able to train intensely. Like there's a limit to what you're going to be able to do in the gym, which is going to prevent you from really seeing the results you want, which I don't know if people have seen lately. Like I know his time on camera has been different, but he's made a lot of gains over quarantine lockdown time because he's been getting 8 hours.
Yeah,
he hasn't been traveling. Like he's legitimately been sleeping well. I was FaceTimed into one of his workouts the other day. Like the dude has pec separation. He's putting on muscle. Like, because he's actually sleeping now and he can be more intense with his workouts.
Isn't that, it's crazy. I was going to kind of relate his whole schedule to a lot of people, right? I mean, Gary definitely is probably the most public facing person that sleeps, 2-3 hours, travels everywhere. But there's tons of guys out there that do that, right? Like it's really, really common in the corporate world. And a lot of our clientele do a similar thing. And it wasn't until recently, obviously, until the world pressed pause and then they got to sleep and they got to recover. And Some people gain some weight in a negative way, but at the same time, they also now have more time to train harder and go a lot better. And I think for some people, it was interesting because the only thing that changed was their sleep. The nutrition stayed the same, the training stayed the same, but the sleep improved and then all the progress kind of started to happen. It just makes you realize that no matter how well you train or how well you eat, sleeping has to come first. It's the foundation which 100%. Those two pillars rest upon. So interesting. So how did you, the one other question just on this point I wanted to talk about with sleep is obviously caffeine's, what I imagine is just a massive part of Gary's life, or at least it was part of your life as well. How did you manage caffeine? Like obviously you want to use it, you kind of don't want it to be a crutch as well. So how did you make that balance?
Oh, it was a crutch.
It was a crutch.
I drank so many monsters over the course of those 3 years. I can't even begin to tell you.
Fuck.
Like, And I was embarrassed about it. I was embarrassed about it because I knew it wasn't good. So for example, like right now I have like this cup with seltzer and some cranberry juice. Just like, I'm just drinking that. Like I just enjoy it. But if I had a cup and I was, and let's say like if I was doing a live call with my inner circle or something, or I was doing a live call like or a podcast, and I was like, I could feel that I was going. I wouldn't just drink the Monster out of the can. I'd put it in a cup like this, or I'd put it in a coffee mug because I didn't want them to see what I was drinking. Yeah. So I was embarrassed. I was like, what, like a terrible example I'm setting. But I'm like, meanwhile, I can barely keep my eyes open because I haven't slept for the last 48 hours. Mm. So again, like I don't want to glorify this. I'm not like proud of this. I don't think this is a good thing that I did. Mm. I just can say that it's something that I did at that time in my life because I think it was worth it for me in my circumstance. And I'm glad I did it, but there's no way I'm doing it again.
Yeah.
I'm sleeping 8 to 10 hours now. I'm working out 6 days. I'm doing jiu-jitsu 6 days a week. I'm doing strength training on top of it. I feel great. But on the flip side, my business isn't growing like it did before. Like when I was doing that, like my social media went from 5,000 followers on Instagram to over 200,000 followers in a matter of months. Mm. It's like, it's not that growth anymore, but I'm okay with it because I've already put in that work.
Mm. Yeah, that's sort of the next thing I was going to say is, you know, obviously, in some ways you can kind of relate it to The Biggest Loser. It's like you go into this artificial environment that you know is not sustainable, you're not going to be there for, but you lose so much weight. And now it's your job on the other side of things to take all the lessons that you learned in that hell house to maintain it in the rest of your life. I want to know from those experiences that you had with Gary, obviously, it was, like you mentioned, unsustainable. What lessons have stuck and what lessons have kind of faded away over time as you kind of reevaluated them and thought to yourself, okay, well, I actually don't want to do that. Don't want to be like that.
So I think to Gary's credit, I think one of the most important things he talks about is like doing what is important for you and finding your own happiness and not chasing money because you think money will bring you happiness, which is like any time in my life I've ever chased money, I've always been less happy every single time. Anytime like more money has been the goal, I've always been more anxious and less happy. I think what the biggest lesson I took, the two biggest lessons are number one, if I am not happy with where I am career-wise, I just need to work harder and I can do that. Like that's it. It doesn't mean I need to do all-nighters. It doesn't mean I need to like not work out, but it does mean like, hey, put the fucking video games down and work a little bit harder. Like that's it. Like if I'm not happy where I'm at career wise, work harder. And on the other hand, I don't want to work as hard as Gary works. Like I don't, I have no interest in it. I want to go on vacation and not use social media. Like I want to travel and see the sights and go to the museums and do that. Like, I want to do that. I love that. I also have no interest in people glorify this idea of being a CEO of a big company. They glorify it. Like that is like a lot of times in culture and society and politics now, it's what people attack. People attack these high-powered CEOs. I'm like, you wouldn't believe how awful that is. He's got 1,000 employees. He's putting out fire after fire after fire after fire every day nonstop. Like there were times where we'd be in London and he'd have to like, he couldn't go to bed because the New York or LA office was still open. They were having huge issues and he'd be up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. because it's still like 5, 6, 7 p.m. their time. And he's got to put out fires. And then he has to get up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. so he can get his workout in and get going in London. It's like, and then he has offices in Singapore and he's got offices all over the world. It's like every time zone he's got offices and who's the person they go to? It's him. It's like, nope. I would really like to have 8 hours of sleep and I'd like to be able to separate work life from family life. And I think for me, the two biggest lessons were, if I want my career to improve, work harder. If I want to relax more, then it's my responsibility to relax more. And it's all in my control.
And do you get, I always wondered, do you get like inside word on, so obviously that's what Gary does, but do you get inside word on like what these other people that are maybe like on that sort of level, like what are their lives like? Are they on top of their fitness, or a lot of these people in the same sort of boat, like they don't sleep, they're on Monster energy drinks all day? Or do you think are there some people that actually really stay on top of it and maybe have the same public profile as someone like Gary, but really take care of themselves just in the way they've set things up?
You know, I think Gary is really one of a kind. I think there might be, I'm sure there are other people like him, but they're not, they're few and far between.
Yeah.
the other people that I know who are similar in terms of business and power as Gary, they all think Gary's out of his mind. They're like, dude, like you're nuts. Like,
yeah.
The other people who are super high level, like own huge businesses, like even they look at Gary and they're like, dude, how do you do this? It's crazy. I mean, from 5 a.m. until midnight, every single day, he has like every single minute of the day is booked. Every minute. Like I can't even begin to imagine. There isn't 1 minute that isn't booked ahead of time.
Fuck.
Like boom, 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 all day, nonstop. There's nothing that's free. And like, and then on top of it, he's traveling and I would fly on planes with him and like, he'd be in first class. I'd be in coach and I'd like go look to see what he was eating, like to make sure he's like sticking on track with his food. And like, he's not sleeping on the plane. Like, he's working, he's doing emails, he's like on his phone. Like if like there's no Wi-Fi on the plane for some reason, he's recording videos of himself and super excited to send it to D-Rock when it's over. Like it's nonstop. It is unbelievable. I've never seen anyone like it. I remember we'd get from his house, we'd get like a 4 a.m. ride from his house to the airport sometimes. And like, he's super exhausted, but he's in the back of the car, just like going all nonstop. And it's, I remember like I would sleep on those rides to the airport sometimes and I'd be like, how in the hell is this? Like this guy slept a fraction of what I slept and he's still going. It's crazy. I don't know. I really don't think there's anyone else like him because I've just never seen that. It's a specimen of a very special kind.
Yeah, there's definitely a genetic component to sleep deprivation, tolerance, and function. Absolutely. Unfortunately, it's just a very, 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 very small fraction of the population. And I think some people would like to believe that they belong in that fraction when they absolutely don't, or that they're a bit of an exception, but they're not. So with, you know, one of the other environments you put yourself in, which is pretty unique when you're pretty young, was Westside Barbell, which not many people get to do at your age. And I guess you didn't really have the size that the usual Westside attendees had. So what parallels did you find between your time? Because it's pretty cool, right? You got to be in like probably the most extreme powerlifting gym in the world and also the most sort of extreme, I guess, content influencer, business person in the world. What kind of similarities did you find, if you've thought about it, or parallels if you've drawn between those two environments and the people that those environments attract? Because I know obviously you mentioned D-Rock and there's probably other people as well that are regular guests in Gary's kind of madhouse show, traveling show. So what were some similarities in those kind of cultures and teams?
It's a great question. I've actually never thought about it, but the first thing that comes to my mind is just how much they love what they're doing. Like Louis is the heart and soul of Westside. And for everyone who doesn't know Westside, it's literally the strongest gym in the world. It's like their weakest guy when I was there squatted 800 pounds. Their weak guy, the chump, squatted 800 pounds. And Louis was at the gym all day, every day. He would go to the gym at 2 a.m. because he wasn't sleeping. Like, and now that I think about it, it's like, oh, that's sort of like Gary. Like Gary would just be working at 2 a.m. Louis would wake up, or he wouldn't go to bed, and he'd go to Westside and he'd do the chains. He would just do it, like, you know how people do battle ropes? Louis does that with chains. Like heavy metal chains. And he'll just do it for 30 minutes. Chink, 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 chink. Like heavy chains. And I tried doing it once for 5 minutes and I thought my arms were going to fall off. My fingers and hands were bleeding. And he just does it 30, chink, 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 nonstop. He's just a ball of muscle. And he just does it nonstop. You walk into Westside, he's doing like neck raises with bands and stuff, or he's over 70 years old, deadlifts over 700 pounds. Are you out of your mind?
It's crazy.
The hell? How do you do that? Like, that's crazy. And he just loves it. And he always says, he's like, if it wasn't for lifting, he'd be dead. And I don't think he means because like he would be doing bad things. I think he means because he loves it so much. If he wasn't able to do it, he would die. Just like, he wouldn't have anything other reason to live. And I believe him. And I think it's like, he loves it so much that there's nothing he'd rather be doing, including sleeping, than that. And I think Gary's the same way. He loves what he does so much. I very firmly believe Gary's not driven by money. He's driven by the love of what he does. I think Louis the same way. I think that's probably the two biggest parallels is even though Louis is like, he's like, you know, he's tatted head to toe. He like is a power lifter, like dangerous guy. Like he loves what he does. It's out of a place of love. Like he just is so passionate about it. And I think that's the similarity between the two of them is they're just obsessed and love what they do so much.
Yeah. And it sounds like they attract people that want to be around that and that want to like get a piece of that or be a part of that culture.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, if you look at the history of Westside, they go through lifters.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, lifters come and go.
Yeah.
The only constant is Louis.
Mm.
If you look at Gary, you know, videographers and editors and team members, they come and go. The only constant is Gary.
Mm.
It's like not everybody is going to be able to keep up with it and no one's going to love it as much as they do. Mm. Nobody. Mm. And it makes sense. It's theirs.
Totally.
They built it. So who? It's like your child. No one's going to love your child more than you will.
Mm.
But like their love and their heart and soul for it is unmatched.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So getting back to your own training, you know, obviously there was a period of time and I think you've posted plenty of content about your transformation and now you just, as you were saying before, you're in a really good place. Was that the first time in your life that you had to go from like a fat version of yourself to like, you know, in shape version of yourself? What was that process like? Because, you know, for a lot of trainers, PTs, you've kind of just been in shape your whole life, right? Maybe it's every now and then you do a bit too much partying or whatever, have a few late nights, but you never get like 3 years really out of shape. So what was that process like?
Yeah, it sucked. But I'll tell you, it's made me a better coach
because
like I now have a better appreciation for it. My whole life, I was terrible in school. I was in special education and I was athletic. So sports were my outlet. Sports are where I shine. And I think that's what happens with a lot of coaches is like they were generally good at it and like they fell into it because they enjoyed it. It's where they felt the most confident. So from wrestling to powerlifting, like that's what I did and I loved it and I was really good at it. Then I have 3 years where I lose a lot of muscle, gain a lot of body fat, and I stop training and stop paying attention to my nutrition as much. And then I have to get back into it.
Mm.
And the thing about getting back into it is you always, your mind remembers you were at your peak.
Yeah.
Right? So my mind remembered me when I was at my peak powerlifting, peak wrestling. Then I go back into the gym and I try and lift weights and I'm like, I am weak. I am out of shape. I'm sweating, trying to peel an orange. I was just out of shape. And it was difficult for me to be consistent because I sucked, right? It was like, it's hard to be consistent with something you suck at.
Mm.
You're consistent with stuff you enjoy doing and you enjoy doing what you're good at.
Right.
So when I first got back into it, it was very difficult for me to be consistent, but I followed my own advice. I coached myself. I was like, all right, I'm going to do 3 times a week. So I started off with 3 times a week. Then after a few months, I worked back up to a 405 deadlift. And then I moved back to 4 times a week. And I was like a little bit inconsistent with 4 times a week. So then I like got real strict with myself. I was like, I got to do this 4 times a week. And then I was up to like a 450 deadlift and feeling good. And, you know, still a bit chubby, but like feeling good. And then I got my nutrition in check. So I got my training first, then I got my nutrition. And then from there, it's just been steamrolling.
Mm.
Once I really started to see the progress, I got motivated. And that's what happens, right? It's like people think they're just going to get motivated from nothing. It's like, no, you have to take action first. You have to do the hard thing first. Then from doing the hard thing, you get results. And from those results, you get motivated. Now I'm back in it. Now I'm training 6 days a week, jujitsu training, strength training on top of it. Like I used to hate doing cardio because like I was just awful at it, but now I'm crushing the echo bike.
Mm.
Like I love it. And I'm back to a point where I haven't been in years and I'm super excited. But the initial first 6 months were terrible.
Mm. Yeah. So obviously you mentioned you did training, then nutrition. Now, obviously, you would have probably made some adjustments to your nutrition, I imagine, but obviously not dramatic ones. What was that? Why did you distinguish them apart like that?
So a number of reasons, but I'll say living in New York City, there's amazing food all over the place. And, you know, my now fiance, my girlfriend at the time, like we were dating and we're going out and like I wasn't at a point, and by the way, I was still staying up pretty late and working hard. Like, I knew I wasn't at a point in which I was like, my nutrition, I wasn't ready to make that sacrifice. I wasn't ready to commit to nutrition. Right. I just wasn't. And I knew it. And I was realistic with myself about it. Training, I was ready. I was like, I am weak. I'm out of shape. Like, let's get in the fucking gym. I was like, there's no reason why I can't do this. So I was like, I'm going to focus on the one thing that I know I'm going to be able to do. And there's no excuse not to. And the interesting thing about this is, and I've noticed with this with clients, if someone's really struggling with their nutrition, one thing, I'll focus on their training. And when their training gets really good, they start focusing on their nutrition because now it's worth it. Because when they see themselves getting stronger, they see themselves making progress, now it's worth it to pay attention to their nutrition so they can get the full reward, the full benefit of all of their effort. So when I got up to about a 450 deadlift again, and I was like, all right, like I'm starting to put on muscle, like I'm starting to feel good, like let's actually take this full throttle. Let's go. Like, let's make this worth it. And then I was ready to go. And then it's not been an issue. So, but I think if I tried to do both at the same time, I would have failed with the nutrition. And then when I failed with that, I would have been demotivated and I probably wouldn't have continued with the training. So just really focusing on one at a time was better for me.
No, I think you said that, you put that really well. And I think you speak for a lot of people that start their journey again in fitness is like, we, when we used to have people come to the gym, we'd start everything. It's like, all right, cool. Here's the nutrition plan. Here's what you got to do. Here's like the training, blah, blah, blah. But you realize, okay, we just need to take this, like, yeah, the training, you've come here for the training now, and then it's not until you are absolutely begging us, you know, that you want to make changes in your nutrition. Like, I don't mean begging, I'm like, please give me some guidance, please let me do this thing here. And I'll be like, all right, cool, once you do all the training, then I help with your nutrition. That's when you know you got it under wraps, because if the training's not solid, if it's not habitual, if it's not built into the routine, it's going to fall away as soon as you start trying to like do meal prep or like this or that. It's just that extra stress. So yeah, we've like completely changed our approach now. So it's good to hear you kind of echo that same sentiment of like, all right, let's get the training really solid first. And then when you're knocking our door down for nutritional guidance, then we can help. And what you kind of find anyway is some people, when their training builds a bit of momentum, is they start making better choices. Like, okay, I might not have 10 drinks, I'll have 8. Or like, okay, I'm going to get to bed a little bit early, I'm going to drink a little bit more water. So the small changes kind of happen to themselves naturally. So
training is probably also one that it's probably easier for most people to win, because you only really need to hit whatever, an hour, 4 times a week. If you can get that right, even if you miss a day, you can like catch it up the next day. Like you can, with some mental fortitude, like really make that work. Nutrition, for, I think, for some new clients, like it is really hard to nail it early on if they've got like some emotional things around food or like one bad day, they feel like they've ruined the whole week. So it's like probably easier in some ways to get an early win with training.
100% And to add on that, I think that's a really good insight, is with training, you're always working towards improving in something, right? Like you're working towards getting stronger, working towards a push-up, working towards a chin-up, working towards a deadlift. You're looking to see what your body can do, and you're adding something to your life. With nutrition, especially if your goal is fat loss, you're inherently going to take something away. There's this inherent aspect of restriction that you will not reap the benefits of immediately. But when you first start going to the gym, you'll get stronger very quickly. Like you will see improvements in your strength session to session when you first start. It's like, that's addicting. It is legitimately addicting to go in and say, well, last week I could do 4 push-ups. This week I did 6. Right? It's like, holy shit, my body's changing. Versus with nutrition, it's like, well, last week I was eating 1500 calories and my weight fluctuated a lot.
Yeah.
It's like, it's hard to really, to really quantify how progress you've made with that. With strength training, it's like, this is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were, so obviously you get over that initial hump of the 6 months and you're kind of building some momentum. And then I think that's kind of where a lot of people, and I guess how you could use the jiu-jitsu analogy. I've done a bit of it, but not enough, but people kind of, they say that most people quit at their blue belt, right? They work so hard to get to the blue belt and they're like, finally got my blue belt, and then they quit. And it's kind of happens a little bit with training and nutrition, is people get that initial goal or that initial 10 kilos that they wanted to get, and they think, all right, cool, done. I don't have to do it anymore. And then they just kind of stop and they give up and they kind of go backwards. So How did you, well, firstly, how did you prevent it for yourself? And then some of those lessons there, because, you know, probably got to a point, like you mentioned with the 450 deadlift, you're like, oh, it's good. And I'm kind of eating the foods I want. Like, do I really have to train more and get back into wrestling or whatever and change
your
diet?
Do I really need 4 times body weight deadlift?
Yeah. Because you'd come such a long way, I'd imagine. So in your way, you're like, man, I've won big here. Like, I'm pretty good now. Like, do I want to go this extra little bit? So as we know, law of diminishing returns, what made you want to put the extra work in, go the extra little bit? And then with your clients, how do you, you know, going through that process yourself, how do you kind of have that discussion now with like, okay, you've got these initial results, let's kind of keep going?
Yeah, I think what happened with me is exactly how I approach it with my clients is as I try and encourage people to make specific goals. And I, one thing I'll do all the time with clients is challenges. Like challenges are just fun. It's so funny when you could say like, hey, we're going to do a program or we're going to do a challenge. The mental response to challenge is radically different than, oh, we're going to follow a program. It's like, so just the verbiage changes. And so I've noticed repeating a challenge with someone every 60 days, every 90 days, every 30 days, whatever it is. If it's a client who's newer and like they don't really understand it, I'll make more brief challenges. Could be a 7-day challenge, right? Maybe it'd be a 7-day, 14-day. Someone who's more seasoned and they understand the game, it'll be like a 90-day challenge because they can be more consistent without an issue, right? But trying to like, all right, let's try and work towards a chin-up. If you've never been able to do a chin-up, like our goal over the next 6 months is to get you to do a chin-up, right? Or maybe it's going to be a certain deadlift, or maybe it's going to be doing a certain mile time. Maybe it's going to be like getting a handstand, whatever it is, or a pistol squat. I have one client right now. She's working towards a one-arm push-up. I'm like super excited about it. I'm excited about it because I've never had a woman tell me like they want to do a one-arm push-up. And she's excited about it because she wants to do a fucking one-arm push-up. It's like, so like we're both excited about it as a team. And that I think is the best part when you're as a team, you're both excited about everything going on. So having a very specific goal or goals that you want to achieve, ideally non-competing. Like if someone was like, I want to squat 800 pounds and run a marathon, I'd say, let's pick one, right? It's like, let's do one at a time. But if it's like, hey, I want to do a one-arm push-up and a pistol squat, we can definitely do that. Or I want to do a one-arm push-up and work towards my first 3 chin-ups, we can definitely do that. But it's having these goals to strive for that I think really drive excitement. Because when you're just going to the gym to go to the gym, it's amazing. But it's hard to get excited for just something you're doing habitually without something to strive for.
Definitely.
When you have like, all right, I want to get my first 5 weighted chin-ups, you can see how close you're getting. Like every bit of progress is a little bit closer, and that's exciting. It's super exciting to see like, oh, I'm just a little bit further away, and that drives motivation, gets you more consistent. If you're just going to go, it's easier oftentimes to write it off, to not go, and or to reduce the intensity. And I've always found intensity will increase when there's an objective goal in front of you, which is like, that's one of the keys of all of this. If you can keep an objective goal in front of you, even if the goals are changing, one goal, it's like stacking them on top of each other. You can always keep intensity high, and the relative intensity will vary, right? The intensity it takes, the toll of intensity a one-arm push-up will take on your body and nervous system is very different than a 500-pound deadlift. Right? One of those you can practice in some way almost daily. Another one once a week is plenty. So the different goals stacking on top of each other helps keep you more consistent, and it will vary the volume and intensity that you're actually doing while always maintaining a relatively high intensity.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I've never heard that because generally for me, challenge is a bit of a dirty word. It's a bit of like a, oh, you did the 6-week shred challenge and then you lost all the weight and then you got fat again and it's just you're in a worse off position. So, but it sounds like you use challenges in a way that it's okay, we're going to pick like a performance goal, maybe pick something really simple so that like at the end of it, if you weren't to do that thing as much or with that intensity anymore, it wouldn't derail your whole fitness journey. It's just something to have a bit more focus.
It's so funny. The fitness industry has a very bad taste in its mouth regard to challenges because like we have these stupid like 7-day challenge cleanse where you like just like, I don't know, drink a detox tea and like, it's like, this is stupid. But for me, clearly there's something there that works from the perspective of getting people motivated.
Yes.
So it's not that challenges are stupid. It's that how most people structure their challenge is stupid. So one of my one of the challenges I'm most proud of that I made like en masse for a large group of people is my calorie cycling challenge. It's 30 days. And the goal is not to lose as much weight as possible. And I pick three winners to win $1,000. Three winners will win $1,000 from doing it. And if someone loses like a lot of weight in 30 days, they're disqualified. They do not win. The people who win are number, the first thing we look at is how consistent they've been over those 30 days within an appropriate calorie range.
Interesting.
That's the first thing we look at, is you have a consistency goal. The challenge is to be at least 80% consistent with your calories that month. Mm. It's like, and then a lot of times the winners will be 85% consistent and they have to submit a long form essay explaining what they learned throughout the challenge. And if someone is 100% consistent and they say like, yeah, I didn't go out to have drinks. I stayed in, I packed all my stuff in Tupperware. I'm like, then you didn't win. Like, this isn't a lifestyle. You literally just suffered for a month. Mm. If someone says I'm 85% consistent, I was able to enjoy birthday cake with my daughter. I went out and had pizza, but I was 85% consistent. You win. Like, that is a great job. You did a wonderful job balancing your life while still achieving your goals.
Interesting. Mm. Yeah. So you use the challenge methodology, but you completely changed the objective, the goal.
You actually made it the reverse.
Yeah. Which is really good. You've given me a lot of ideas. All right. Well, Jordan, I know I'm conscious of your time here. So we'll wrap with your final four questions. So the first question is, if you had an opportunity to sit down and interview anyone on your podcast, who would you choose and why?
Oh, man. It's funny. I've gotten this question like, if I could talk with anybody, who would it be?
Yeah.
No one's asked like on my podcast. I'm going to keep the same answer. Keep in mind, I'm Jewish. But I'd like to sit down with Adolf Hitler and figure out what the fuck was going on. I just want to like sort of just talk with him, get to know him a little bit, feel him out. Like, I've always been very interested in the Holocaust and I've studied it a lot, but I'd really like to just sit down with him and have a conversation and like hear what the fuck is going on in his head.
Mm. Well, I'm sure you'd be interested in that conversation.
I feel like he would have had a hectic schedule as well. it's like a Gary Vee of his time.
He definitely would have had a hectic schedule.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at his medicine cabinet, I know by the end he was taking like amphetamine, cocaine, like his doctor had him on some wild shit. wild
yeah,
shit. Yeah.
I've heard that he was on like these crazy concoctions every morning. Yeah. He'd get injected into him. Like, yeah. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, well,
not to mention, I mean, like, there was some real, that was like the quintessence, that was a quintessence of evil, right? Mm-hmm. So to know and to see the evil that you're doing every day, you've got to have some type of a drug to keep you alive. Mm. Like, that's just, no human is built to see that level of evil and live with it.
Mm.
Like, it's crazy.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's a bit of a history buff, but yeah, one of the, just to side tangent here, one of the moments in the war, like there's all these critical, pivotal moments, right, where if it could have gone left, it could have gone right, you know, we'd all be speaking German or whatever. But one of the moments that stopped us
from speaking... we'd be dead, bro, if we're speaking fucking shit.
Yeah, well, if I was here, then I'd be speaking German. But anyway, one of the pivotal moments was this. It was when they landed for D-Day, and they think they were landing on one beach, but they tricked them, and they landed on another beach. And anyway, but... you know, the German army saw them and they had to get the message back to Hitler to get the permission to move the forces. So this is one of the mistakes that they made, is that all the decisions rested with him, whereas it should have been, the decision chain should have been a lot shorter, right? So they could make decisions faster. And the message needed to get back to him, hey, can we move the forces? We found out where they're actually going. They're not at this beach. It's just a small force. But he was so blasted from the night before that they couldn't wake him up. He was that whatever drug concoction, whatever partying he was doing, it was some one of his top officers. It was like his birthday. So they were, you know, this is like towards the end of the war as well. Like, it's kind of critical kind of stuff. D-Day was like at the end. Yeah, they were out partying and it was like obviously such a massive party. And you weren't allowed to wake Hitler up. That was kind of the rule. Like, you don't disturb his sleep. So he's like slept in. He normally wakes up, you know, whatever, like 6 a.m. But he'd slept in like 3 hours. And by that point, that time... of him being hungover and not being able to wake up, because they didn't want to disturb him, because obviously people have probably woken him up, disturbed him before, and just got blasted, right? I'm sure he woke up and just gave him like an earful for an hour. Yeah, maybe even kill them. Who knows? So no one wants to wake them up. And they're like, kind of like, hey, we need to make this decision. Like, it's pretty important. It could be like the pivotal moment of the war. No one wakes him up. And then by the time they tell him, he's like, yeah, of course, move the army. It's too late. All right. The allied forces have already gotten far enough. Yeah. So that was one of the...
I didn't know that.
Snooze, you lose, bro. That's where the saying came from.
Yes. It's pretty nuts. Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Anyway. That was a great answer. We haven't had that one before.
So the lesson from that is make sure you delegate.
Exactly.
Or set an alarm, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Second question, Jordan, is if there's something that you kind of do every single day that you now feel like is an essential habit or routine that you do each day to make sure the day is a success at the end, what is that habit or routine?
You know, I would say lately it's been jujitsu. That's the first. I wake up and like early. I go on jujitsu early in the morning, and by lately, it's been like the last over a year. Mm. It's just been for me. My first jujitsu coach said something to me that I'll never forget. He was like, "When you start your day trying to prevent someone from choking you out, then every other challenge you face throughout the day seems relatively insignificant."
Mm.
And it's held so true, where it's like when you spend the first hour of your day trying to save your life, the rest of it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's been something that's motivated me. It's gotten me stronger mentally, physically, emotionally. I think that's been a huge positive influence in my life in terms of schedule, in terms of staying on track, in terms of being motivated, and also really doing what is most important to me, getting in touch with like, what do I care about most to actually spend my time on it?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And now can I add on one? Did Gary have any sort of like daily ritual thing? Like, I'm sure he didn't have like a 45 minute meditation session, but was it like a 12 second meditation thing that he added in?
To my knowledge, no. And I spent a lot of time with him. I don't know. I think the thing with...
Or maybe even one that you implemented. Was it like, hey, you have to have this pre-workout concoction every day?
No, actually. I mean, every day when we started out, we always started with some soft tissue work and mobility. That was like the non-negotiable. If we couldn't do anything else, we were at least going to do soft tissue work and mobility, because like that's really what he needed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was like the... If he couldn't give me anything, he had to give me 15 minutes of that, and that was it.
Yeah. Mm. That is the basics.
Yeah, awesome. Nice. And so next thing, Jordan, third question, is there anything recently that you've changed your mind on that for a while you held as a strong belief?
Definitely. I'm trying to think what specific, that recently I changed my mind on that I used to hold as a strong belief. It's a good question. I sort of want to find something more deep, but I'm also conscious of time. I would say one thing from a nutritional perspective that I think the fitness industry generally falls, and especially the physique and powerlifting world tends to really over prescribe protein. And I think I used to be in the like, you gotta hit the 1 gram per pound. Like I was like super adamant about that. But I'd say in recent years, I've really been like, let's chill. Like you don't need, if you're competing in physique or bodybuilding or powerlifting, yeah, then sure, by all means go for that amount. But the majority of people I work with are just everyday fitness people, like everyday, like moms and dads, and like, they just want to move better and feel better. And like really making like the number of messages I get every day from people being like, I just can't hit that amount of protein. I'm like, relax. You're fucking fine. You don't need to hit that much protein. You're going to be good. It's like, and I think a younger me would have been like, well, if you want it, you'll figure it out. It's like, Jesus, just focus on protein at every meal. Just make sure there's protein there. You're good. Like you'll be fine. That's really, you're not going to lose all your progress because you didn't hit exactly that amount of protein.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think that's really true. Mm. I think it's a lot can be said about that. And there's, yeah, so much that goes into it. So well put. So final question, actually, I've decided just now in this very moment to change it ongoing. So we're going to scrap the fourth question for the new fourth question, which is, and you're the first recipient of it. What was the silver lining or one of the best things that came out of the pandemic for you? Now, obviously, we're not completely out of it yet. Obviously, it's still going on, but there's surely something positive that has come out of it for you or you and your family and your business.
Yeah. I mean, I think I love this question because so much like, listen, it's obviously been terrible for many reasons, but like, I'd like to talk about the positive sides of it and what we've been able to make out of it. So I think for me, it's forced me to slow down and spend more time with my fiance and just focus on sleep. And like, I've never been a video gamer ever. Like, I've never played video games. I was always active and playing sports. And then when I was, you know, over the last 10 years, I've been making content since July 2011 nonstop. Like, I've never really taken time just to relax and play. Mm. And I started seeing a therapist about like 2 months ago, just on Zoom, which has been great. And I've loved it. And one of the things that I used to feel guilty about playing video games because I started doing that over lockdown. Because I was like, whatever, I'll just start playing. And I really enjoyed it, but I felt guilty that I wasn't making content or like interacting in my DMs. And I told him that. And he said something. He's like, what I love is that you're playing. He's like, in adult life, we often don't play much. Like, play is sort of a thing that's usually reserved for kids. He's like, it's good that you're playing. It's good that you have time that like you're not thinking about work, that you're is like it's and getting to that point of not feeling guilty about taking some time just to play has been, I think, a wonderful thing for me mentally and emotionally.
Mm. No, I'm so glad you said that, because yeah, I could echo the same sentiment. Yeah, as soon as I locked down, I was like, I'm getting an Xbox again. It's been many years, but I'm gonna do it. And then yeah, you just get this overwhelming sense of guilt, like, this is just like not good, it's a waste of time or whatever, but you're enjoying it so much, like to the point that and I'm fortunate that I've got a very insightful girlfriend, and she's like, you know, play is such an important part of what you do. So she's like, I don't want to have like interrupt your playtime. But I guess there's always just that limit, right? It's like, all right, when you go from 2 hours to 7.5 hours, it's like you can't, I think you kind of missed something in the middle there. So yeah, I can definitely agree that there's so much to be said for it. Now it's more of a social thing as well, right? You can kind of interact with people that you know online, so there's that component. But no, I'm glad you said that, because I feel a lot better now. I'm sure a lot of people listening feel better now as well. But Jordan, we've gone over time. You've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much for all your insights. What's the best place for people to keep up with what you do and all your content?
Yeah, I have my own podcast, the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast, or Instagram, YouTube. If you Google my name, you'll find a lot.
You will. You will, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, and final thing is, yeah, Jordan, you've put out a lot of great content. I think you've shared a lot today. So thank you so much. And if the opportunity ever comes up to do it in person, if we travel again, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah, I'd love to. This was great. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, mate.
There we are, guys. What an incredible episode with Jordan Syatt. Absolutely love that one. Jordan, thank you so much for being on, brother. We really appreciated your time. We know you don't have a lot of it because you're playing video games all the time. But anyway, amazing episode. If you guys loved it, please take a screenshot of your phone listening to it. Tag Jordan, tag us. It's the best way that you guys can connect and say thank you. We don't always feel the love all the time. It's just Raph and I in the studio. So please, please tag us, share it. Much love from our side. And then, of course, supporting the show today was Activated Nutrients. The Power Up product is now 40% off. If you want a way to wean yourself off caffeine and increase your natural energy levels, you can pick up the Power Up product at activatednutrients.com. The code is MMP. That's going to get you 40% off that product. This offer is not going to last forever. So if you're hearing this, if you're low on energy, if you're sick of caffeine, now is a great time to make the switch. And then, of course, if you go to True Coach as well, truecoach.co/MMP. You guys can start a 2-week free trial on the product. Get a couple of clients on there. Get yourself on there as well. Experience the beauty that is technology. Get rid of those Excel, get rid of those Google Docs forever. And then sign up. Get a 2-week free trial at truecoach.co/MMP. You can check it out there. Guys, thank you as always for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.